You know, Jeff Merrick, I think you're a big jerk. A big effing jerk who doesn't know diddly squat about hoddly do about this Penguins team. Go sell some ice cream.
You're so ageist, Greg Wyshynski. You're so, all this ageism on the blog and on the podcast. I don't know if
I asked my grandson to go on the Google machine to find out what ageist means, and you're absolutely right. Greg Wyshynski is an ageist. He is going to get a squaddly-do, biddly-do, go sell some ice cream, you guggly Googler.
Hey, by the way, I think I have a theory on why where the ice cream comment comes from.
Please do.
For Rob Rossi. I've heard it before from various general managers and assistant general managers. When they want to insult a scribe, they'll say, that guy doesn't know anything. The only thing that guy can scoop is ice cream.
Really? Is that really what it was?
Now, I don't know. That's what I'm guessing. When I first saw it in Rossi's piece, that's, I think, oh, okay, that's the old GM insult. You don't know anything. The only thing you can scoop is ice cream.
I heard from a couple of people that this might be the truth, might be not, that Rossi's family actually does own a Dairy Queen or Dairy Queens in the Pittsburgh area.
Oh, so Jim did his research. Oh, that's classic Chirp. We go and get some ammunition. Oh, you know what's so funny? Because in the summer, the gym that I work out, all the kids do, like all the junior kids, is they exchange information about other guys on their team so players can chirp them, but have like this informed arsenal of chirps. That it is all biographically based. So Jim's actually done his homework then, if that's true.
That's impressive. For those of you who have absolutely no idea what we're talking about, Jim Rutherford, GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, had a conversation with Rob Rossi, caustic scribe, friend of the show, and columnist for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, as they left the elevator after Game 3, the Penguins losing Game 3 to the Rangers last night. In the conversation, Jim Rutherford basically told Rossi he has no effing idea what he's talking about. Thanks for the effing support. And then said, go sell some ice cream as the ultimate old guy insult. And basically now you've reached the point in the Pittsburgh media where everyone, it's like the end of Reservoir Dogs. Everyone has their gun trained on each other.
It's a good visual, yeah.
You've got old columnists starting at new columnists, starting at old beat writers, starting at new beat writers. And basically everyone is saying Rossi overblew a situation, which was a conversation between Rutherford and Rossi. And Rossi obviously probably is going to say, well, you know what? It was on the record, so I don't know what the fuck you wanted me to do if it's on the record. That's probably what he's going to say. So it's a big schmoz, and it's a lot of fun, and I think it's indicative of how terrible things are in Pittsburgh right now.
What have we been saying since about just after Christmas? Things are tense in Pittsburgh. Things are really tight. Things are tense. And like I said a couple of weeks ago, if they lose in the opening round, I mean, it would have been even worse if they didn't even make the playoffs. Everything is on the table. Everything is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Honestly, like I got this from a really, really good place. And that's why I dropped it on the podcast a few weeks ago. This has come, like, honestly, if/when they bow out against the New York Rangers after a lifeless performance yesterday, save the last couple of minutes where all of a sudden they found some desperation and turned into a Pittsburgh Penguins team that could actually start to create, there's going to be, you know, there is going to be a guillotining of that franchise.
What does that mean though? Like if you had to probably starts with
GM and coach and then goes right down to players.
Now, here's the thing about the GM and the coach, and I wrote about it this morning, and this might be revisionist history, but I don't care. The more you think about it, the more it becomes quite apparent that their idea was Bylsma has to go and Ray has to go, and we'll just fill in the details after that. Right? Like, isn't that, I mean, yeah. Looking back at it, like, a 66-year-old Jim Rutherford, Mike Johnston, this is not next steps to transforming the franchise. This is a mad scramble of a Band-Aid of a solution. In Johnston's case, hoping against hope that a coach with no NHL experience is going to be able to turn a playoff team into a well-rounded playoff team. And in Rutherford's case, hoping against hope that this guy who, since the 2005 lockout, won a cup, but did nothing else really after that. And won a cup in an anomaly year, thanks to Cam Ward. hoping against hope that he was going to be able to fix the problems that Ray Shearer presented to the team. Now, Rutherford's not been able to do any of that. And by the way, David Perron, hold your nose looking over that box score. And then Johnston, despite his best efforts, I think has been outcoached in this series. And I question whether or not that was the right decision, bringing this team's offense down to 19th in the league, because now it doesn't seem like they know how to score against the Rangers.
Compounding things, you see Evgeny Malkin. To me, he looks like he's still hurt. And to a lot of people, he looks like he's still hurt, to the point where I'd think about putting him on the wing and giving Brandon Sutter more minutes. Brandon Sutter has actually been pretty good. Actually, Brandon Sutter has been really good for this team. I'd bump his minutes up, because he's up around like 12 minutes. I'd move Sutter's minutes up. I'd move Malkin over to the wall. Here I am playing like low-rent coach. But you're right about the or it does seem as if the Penguins, when they got rid of Bylsma and got rid of Shiro, it was a classic case of jumping before you had somewhere to land.
Yeah.
Right? You know, before you had that contingency plan, okay, well, if we do X, then Y will happen. They didn't have that. And we're making things even worse. Okay, so once they installed Rutherford, then he didn't even get the coach that he wanted. Right? Willie Desjardins was on his way to Pittsburgh, and then, oops, no, I'm going to Vancouver.
Right.
And then, right. And then it was a scramble again, and they went to Mike Johnson from Portland.
That's why, you know, Bylsma, I think, had to go, right? But the more you think about it, the more you say to yourself, if the end result was to get to this summer, where they are probably going to make a run at Babcock, whether it's successful or not, we'll see. But this just feels like the weirdest stopgap year ever for a franchise, doesn't it? It just does.
Yeah,
like Rutherford was a Band-Aid. He only had like a 2-year contract. Johnston was here for some reason, because someone had to be, because you had to get Bylsma out of there. And then the cracks in the foundation of this franchise are becoming more and more evident with each passing day. I don't know what the hell they do. Who'd come here?
Well, listen, wherever you have a Sidney Crosby, there'll be coaches/general managers that are interested, thank you very much. And perhaps, you know, to your point about Mike Babcock, maybe the dual portfolio is interesting. Or maybe the head coach with some player personnel powers becomes interesting to Mike Babcock. Man, is this field opening up wide for Mike Babcock? Like, every single conversation about every team, like... You're the running back who just looked upfield and just got a million blocks and a million lanes. Like, if you're Mike Babcock, your biggest stress is, man, how am I going to narrow this down to one choice? If you have a Crosby there, there'll be teams that are interested. The interesting thing about the Penguins right now, we mentioned this on the podcast a few weeks ago, they're kind of in that weird phase where there's still some elite-level forwards on the team. The back end has been decimated. The back end is really green, but... when you look at what's on the horizon for them, between a healthy Olli Maatta and a Derek Pouliot and a Brian Dumoulin and a Scott Harrington, like, there's a foundation of a really good young defense there.
Right.
They're just not there yet. It's almost as if, okay, how long can the forwards wait for the defensemen to catch up to being at the top level in the NHL? It's such a bizarre year for the Pens.
It's no Severson, Merrill, Larson. But I mean, it's an okay group.
Juggernaut, yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah. No, it's you're right, and that's the thing about Ray. Like Ray filled the cupboard that's labeled defense. It's overflowing. It's overflowing to the point where they had to trade Dupre, right? It's that other cupboard labeled forwards that's the real issue right now. In Pittsburgh. And that's where Ray really failed the team, I think, is at the up front, which is an odd place to fail your team when you have two of the best players in the world and you're basically saying, we'll go find someone you can play with. I don't know. We won't grow them or nothing. We'll just find someone. I don't give a shit. Trade deadline, whatever.
You know what? And again, this is revisionist history, too, and it's always tricky when you go back and redraft and say, well, you should have done this, and this is where the general manager messed it up. But when you talk about stocking defensemen, this is always tough when you lose the kid from the backyard.
Wait, hold on. You mean like Dustin Buff? Oh, stocking, not stocky. Sorry.
Okay. Because I was doing this the other day, sitting around. I came home from Hockey Central one night and I was thinking about the Penguins and going to look at Ray Shiro's history. And I keep coming back to 2011 and how different things would be if, and I know I hate doing this with the draft, but he's a kid in your backyard. And it's always tough when you lose the kid in your backyard and you had a shot. How different would things be if in 2011 Reishiro didn't draft Joe Morrow, the defenseman, and instead took Brandon Saad from Pittsburgh playing in Saginaw.
Oh, yeah.
See, it wasn't as if no one knew him in Pittsburgh either, right? He's playing in the OHL, but still. Played on the U18 team for the U. That's the one that I keep coming back to. Like, the one move you wish you could do again. If I'm Reishiro, I'm probably saying, yeah, I missed on that one. And he was in our back. He grew up playing in Pittsburgh. One of those Pittsburgh kids.
That's a good one. That's a good
one. That's the one I keep.
The one place I am not going to sit here and criticize Shiro for, or criticize the organization for, is Jordan Staal. Any criticism of that deal is complete and total revisionist history. Okay, the trade market for Jordan Staal was one team, and the fact of the matter is that he didn't want to play there anymore. He didn't want to play behind Sid and Gino anymore. So hands were tied. One team destination. I mean, that's it. What do you want? And like you said, Brandon Sutter's not been the problem. Brandon Sutter's been arguably their best forward in the series.
Yep, good player.
And so, I don't know. It's a head scratcher. I don't know what the hell they do. And of course, like, we talk about them like being, you know, down 3-0. They're down 2-1.
The way
they play is this: they lose the first 40 minutes of the game in like stunningly inept fashion, and then they try to get it all back in the last 20. And they possess the hell out of the Rangers in the last 20. They play really well, but they can't get over the hump in two of the games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And if you look at some of the routes the players are taking to the puck, they are the softest routes you've seen in the playoffs so far. Mm. Like, if you're Mike Johnson, we were doing this last night on Hockey Central before I hit. We're just like, you know what, let's just do like a little pack here of the routes the Penguins are taking to the puck. And in playoffs, I know it's called heavy hockey, but you have to take the most dangerous routes there, because those are the ones that's, you know, they're the route to the fruit. That's how you get the puck.
Route
to the fruit, baby. And that's where, that's how you get the puck in the playoffs. Yeah. But they're taking these like roundabout routes, like, ooh, I don't want to get hit, or ooh, that's a little bit scary in there. It's like, what are you, like, not Crosby. Crosby's not doing that, but there are plenty of other guilty parties on that team that were taking some pretty soft routes to the puck yesterday. Just to make it look like they were going for it. But really, oof, I don't want to go in there. It hurts. I got a bruise the last time I went in there.
The question of the day, by the way, is give us your best Jim Rutherford insult. That's not an insult against Jim Rutherford. Nate Ewell, who writes 5 years, $35 million. Yes, we get it. He signed Alex Semin, and that's a great joke. But we're not talking about ways to insult Jim Rutherford. We're talking about kindly old Jim Rutherford insults to others, such as Matt Riegler's suggestion, Mark Staal is a debaucherous heathen.
She's looking for old-timey insults then.
Dan Saracini, get your shine box. Patrick Clark, straighten up or I'll replace you with Paul Maurice, Eric Cole, or Joe Corvo, or Chad LaRose. By the way, before anyone else points it out, yes, my Jim Rutherford is also my Doc Emrick. We've been through this. Well, there's only 9 impressions that I do, but I just recycle them and I use them. Here's Jim Rutherford. Go sell some ice cream. Here's Doc Emrick. Save by Brodeur with the paddleboard, and the play is stopped.
That's it. You got to trail off real nicely. That's good.
It's the best part of my Doc Emrick impression. It's impeccable.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you kindly, sir. She smiled, but the money on the table, that's for the beer.
Phil Coker writes in, the trademark of a Jordan Staal wasn't one team the Rangers were in. No. Please.
He was going to play with his brother.
He was going to play with his brother. I was there at the draft when it all went down, and you had GMs lament. Brian Burke. I'll tell you right now, Brian Burke. I think maybe off the record. I don't know who the hell knows. Who gives a shit? He's not a GM anymore. Lamented the fact that they couldn't get Jordan Staal that draft because he only had one place to go. And he's literally sitting there in the back of the draft, and he's like, I traded Jordan Staal in a millisecond. He didn't want to come. He didn't want to come to Toronto. Want to play with his brother. What are you supposed to do? So any inkling that anybody has that Jordan Staal is going to go anywhere but Raleigh is off base. He had one destination.
Was no market.
No market.
100%.
For the same it was time. One market. It's Raleigh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Carolina Hurricanes. Hey, pretty interesting night around the NHL last night, hey, outside of what happened with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers last night. Was it just me, or did St. Louis say after game two with Vlad Tarasenko getting a hat trick, okay, this is going to be easy now? Did they skate last night like a team that thought it was going to be easy from here on in, or were that just my eyes? Like, I know that first line of Parisi, Pominville, and Granlund were boffo good, but did St. Louis just come in there and say, yeah, this is going to be easy, we're going to take 2 points, or sorry, take the win, take their per diem, and go home?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, too.
No, it's frustrating because you felt like the Tarasenko thing was going to be a turn-the-corner moment. And
he didn't get a shot on net last night.
I know. Game three was a real was going to be a tough one for them to win. But now, see, the problem with St. Louis is this. They're not putting the foot on the throat of the Wild in any way. Lose game one, have to win game two. Lose game three, have to win game four. Like, at some point, you've got to flip the script here and make the Wild worried. They're not worried yet. It's St. Louis scratching and clawing back into the series. And now, not only is the Wild in control, but Dubnyk pitches a shutout.
Do you think
it's Dubnyk?
I know. Well, he wasn't even tested. What was it, 17 shots? Like, how many of them were quality chances? I'll wait. Do you think this is a franchise-changing series for St. Louis?
Oh, if they lose the series, then it's going to be a change at the top, and it's going to be one of these mutual uncouplings because he doesn't have a contract for next season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in which case Ken Hitchcock then joins the mad world scramble of coaches all looking for jobs, which is insane.
True. Musical chairs, I know.
No, I think they make a change at the top if they lose in the first round. And I don't think they. I mean, again, they're my cup pick. I can't say they're gonna lose the first round, but it's a little disconcerting that they seem to get anybody but Tarasenko going in this series offensively.
Didn't we start to see the beginning of? Like, Ken Hitchcock gets mad. We've seen Ken Hitchcock get mad before. And last night, towards the end of the game, we saw the beginning of Ken Hitchcock getting really mad. If they lose the next game, you'll really start to see it. Mm-hmm. With 90 seconds left, there's Reeves. And then who comes over the boards afterwards? Steve Ott. It's 3-0. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's me throwing out. Really? Really?
Oh, by the way, okay. Maxime LaPierre has actually played pretty well for the Penguins too. I thought
he has. Yep. Yeah, he has. He seems a little bit. He seems a little different to me with the Pittsburgh Penguins than he has with other teams. You know, most. You know, notably, you know, Vancouver and even with St. Louis as well. He seems like a different player in that. He's still the same guy. He's the guy that, as Craig Simpson once said on Hockey Night in Canada, when they did a close-up one shot of him, how do you not want to punch that face? He's still that guy in some sense, but he's not like he's still a frustrating player to play against. He's just not annoying anymore.
I know we've probably told the story before, but one of the greatest press conference moments I've ever been part of was Boston Vancouver in Boston. LaPierre he dove pretty epically to draw a penalty, kind of faked an injury. And Scotty Burnside from ESPN gets up during the press conference.
Oh,
and he goes, question for Max. Just wanted to check in, make sure you're okay. I saw you were writhing in pain on the ice. Wanted to make sure everything was fine. Didn't have to go to the hospital or anything. Just wanted to make sure that you're going to be okay for the next game.
Did you go to Lourdes between the end of the game and this press conference?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and LaPierre just gave him a smirk and gave him the brush off. But it was like one of the most badass moments I've ever seen.
Hey,
of course,
you know
then
what?
Then trumped by the badass moment of badass moments, which is transcribing the entire construction of Team USA in your meetings with the team.
Okay, let me, I know that was a frosty flake. Okay, so then let me ask you this one. I can't remember who the player was. Who was back checking on it? Might have been Derek Stepan. One of the Rangers yesterday, I'm glad you brought up LaPierre because I wanted to mention this on the podcast today. Okay, here's like the then Max versus the new Max. Mm-hmm. He's carrying the puck through the neutral zone and he gets hooked. Like it's on his hip and he could go down. But he doesn't. He stays to fight through it. He ends up losing the puck, and the puck goes back the other way. I'm of two minds about it. One, that's great. You kind of fought through a check. But two, man, the old Max would have fallen down and drawn a penalty and put the Pittsburgh Penguins on a power. That's how things are called right now.
Right. Yeah.
What mind are you at of that very specific play by LaPierre last night? Should he have stayed up like a man, or should he have gone down to put the Pens in the power play?
Gone down. Come on. What are we talking about here? Like a man. Come on, everybody dives. Everyone dives. There's only one guy in this game who once told me he didn't dive. You know who it was? It was a man who was a Penguin until he was getting scratched left and right. Greg Adams once told me he didn't dive.
As we've talked about before, diving is the new hooking.
Yeah. Diving is the new hooking. That's it. Here's a man who never dives. This is a man who stays on his skates, a man who's always straight and narrow.
Bends his knees, skates through the check.
Here is Nick Kotsunika from Yahoo Sports, who is in Winnipeg, as we turn our attention to what I like to call the participation ribbon series, because evidently, even though they're down 3-0 in a series in which many people picked them to defeat the Ducks, we should all give them a pat on the head and an attaboy, because the Jets tried their hardest and their fans are very vocal. Hi, Nick.
I don't dive. I just trip naturally, organically.
There you go.
It's that damn raised blue line they're using now, Nick.
Yeah, the sniper upstairs, yes.
What was it like last night? Give us your point of view.
It was awesome. I mean, it really was. And, you know, you knew it was going to be good. And I've been in a lot of loud buildings and a lot of cool situations. But, you know, it was special. I mean, the whiteout was as advertised. The volume was as advertised. But what makes it different to me is just the way they sustain it and the things they cheer for. You know, they're not just, you know, cheering Winnipeg goals. They're cheering Anaheim icing. you don't hear that in other buildings. I mean, it was awesome, and then the end was equally as heartbreaking because, you know, that puck goes in the net, and it was stone cold silent. I mean, I'm up at the very top of the rink, and I can hear the Ducks, you know, yelping and you know, in joy, and it was just dead silent in there. It was unbelievable.
Now, Nick, I tried my best on television to spot one, and I couldn't. Was there anybody in that building not wearing white?
So I looked around, and it was hard to find people. There was a couple wearing these orange Ducks sweaters in the section right below me. Because it was like the entire section's white, and it was like this little tiny spot of orange, but it wasn't many, man. And it was funny what people were wearing that was white. It wasn't just like white T-shirts. It was like wedding dresses and tuxedos and robes and wigs. It was pretty cool scene.
I saw some Winnipeggers that weren't wearing white, Nick. You know who that was? The Winnipeg Jets. If you're going to have a whiteout, shouldn't the team wear white as well?
you're right.
Pretty
funny. Look weird. But it was cool. I mean, it was as advertised. And you're right. It is like the participation ribbon thing. But that'll fade quickly, right? Like, eventually, they're not going to be happy here just to make the playoffs and have a playoff game. Eventually, they're going to be ground down by losing, like, the Leafs fans or Canucks fans or anybody else. And that's why this is a really cool, little, sweet, innocent time. It's like it's the honeymoon, right? Enjoy it while it lasts.
Sure.
Where do you think people were wrong on this team, though? Because let's face it, like, this was kind of a glamour pick for a while, you know, heading into the playoffs for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people thought that they were going to pull the upset here. What is it about the Jets? What is it about the Ducks that has made this series so lopsided?
The short answer to me is experience and discipline. You know, the Jets took a lot of penalties during the regular season. We've seen some of that in this series, like the Buffalo one last night, even though they killed it, is a good example. And, you know, some of it is just confidence. Like, in the analytics era, we don't want to, you know, talk about that or acknowledge that. But these are human beings, and belief has a lot to do with it. And the Ducks all season have come back and come back and come back. They believe they can do it. They play loose in that situation. And Blake Wheeler today said, look, they're confident. They're playing loose from behind in the third. We want it so bad. We're squeezing our sticks. And you see it. The Jets have just made some key mistakes, key times. The Ducks keep coming, and they put the puck in the net. And that's what the series has come down to. I mean, the Jets have led far more than the Ducks have, but the Ducks aren't bothered by it. They keep playing. They get the key goal at the end, and that's why your series is 3-0.
Yeah, but that's the weird thing about the series, too, is, you know, Anaheim has only led for, I think it's under 15 minutes in the entire series, which is, in a lot of ways, One of the most interesting things about the playoffs in the era of analytics, given that the series can go as small as four games, don't we just kind of take analytics for the playoffs and throw them out the window?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think analytics give you a guide, but the first thing analytics people will tell you is small sample sizes, right? Well, that's all the playoffs are.
That's my point. You know what I mean? That's my point. How predictive can it be in a series that ends in four?
Just not as predictive as it is during the regular season. I mean, it still gives you a guideline. It still tells you what the odds are, but these are small sample sizes, and little things matter, and who's hot matters, and who's confident matters. And we talk about experience, and they shrug it off, but it matters if it applies to the ice and how you're playing. Like, if you're Ryan Kessler, and they're saying Ryan Kessler sucks, and you're down a goal, and you're scared, you know, if that bothers you, you're not going to play well. If you're Ryan Kessler, you've been there before, and you're like, screw you, there you are, right? It's amazing how you can get lucky when you're in the right spot.
Yeah, and I think more than predictive, it becomes sort of a way to evaluate games. I mean, you look at any of those Rangers-Penguins games and see what the possession numbers are for the first and second period versus what the Penguins do in the third period once the Rangers start going to their shell a little bit. I mean, I think it's more evaluative than it is predictive in the playoffs. But yeah, forget right, Merrick. Yeah. Merrick's just a Luddite, so don't worry about him.
I don't even like that they keep assists, Nick. Assists are fancy stats for me.
Hey, Nick, I know you're working on a story about him. Your thoughts on the Dustin Byfuglien show right now in Winnipeg?
Well, what was funny was, so he comes out today, and I ask him point blank, what happened on the Corey Perry play? What happened after the goal? And he goes, I forget what his exact words were, but like, as long as we stick together, we'll be all right. And then somebody else asks about something else. He goes, as long as we stick together, we'll be all right. He's pulling his Marshawn Lynch act.
That is the exact, and, you're right, Nick. Here's the exact quote. As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right. That's all he said.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and I said this to Paul Maurice in the press conference. I said, look, to me, that looks like a lack of maturity and accountability. Is it? You know, because there's a difference, like, we can only judge guys on what they say, right, and what they do. And it sure looks like he's made some dumb plays, and he isn't taking, ownership of it. He looks, like, immature. But what matters is what he's doing behind the scenes. I had a fascinating exchange with Maurice, and the bottom line is the Jets love him. He's not perfect. He's not telling us what we want to hear. But he's competitive. He's defiant. You know, and at the end of the day, the good outweighs the bad with Buff. I just think it's inexcusable for him to do what he did at the end of the regular season. It was a horrible penalty, whether they killed it or not, just at bad times. And when he comes out and says that, you just shake your head. But, you know, I think it says a lot that the coach sort of goes to bat for him, and defends him in that way. I think, you know, Buff's still on his good side, which is interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see the reaction of Jets fans last night because after the loss, for whatever reason, I noticed on social media a lot of people kind of calling out Byfuglien and say, what do we do with this guy? And I don't know, it's such a unique talent that I think he's one of these players that you accept the flaws and you accept some of the, shall we say, impulse control problems with his stick and other people's heads, and you recognize that he's kind of a special player.
And yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to, you know, and he has, he's gone up front, he's moved back, he's done what the coach has asked him to do in that sense. He can make plays that other guys can't do. He's got a big minus number, but not all of that's his fault. So he's not a perfect player and he can't take penalties like that. And I'd sure like it if he handled himself better, but I think the good outweighs the bad, and, you know, behind closed doors, I bet a lot of guys are snickering, going, good for you, Buff, way to stick it to the media. Because, like, you know, those guys, they're emotional, you know, and they don't love us either, you know, that's for sure.
Ryan Kessler, last night was an example of why exactly Anaheim made that trade.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, he's a gritty guy, as we all know. He's a good two-way player, and he thrives in that situation. I mean, he used to play in Winnipeg. You know, he was a Manitoba Moose, right? And he comes back in here, and he's the villain right off the get-go. He's the guy people are picking on, and he just seems to play better. You know, like, he's he is here for this time of year, and he gives them that 1-2 punch down the middle. You know, he's a good player, man. And if he's healthy, which he wasn't always in Vancouver, he's a hell of a player.
That he is. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts? Oh, before we get to thoughts around the league, sir, you also wrote yesterday about the Las Vegas Black Knights, as they will be called, I'm sure, in a few years. What is your take on Vegas expansion? When are we going to know about it? Is it going to happen? What's the latest on Las Vegas?
Well, I want Las Vegas Aces. That's my what I'm hoping for. I don't think I'm going to get it, but that's
well,
what I want.
Nick, as you may or may not know, we have thrown our support behind the Las Vegas Craps, but I don't think we'll get that either.
I like that. Well, anyway, it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen in June. I was told flat out, like, we're not going to go to Vegas, go to the Board of Governors meeting, and have an announcement that Vegas has been awarded a franchise. I was told that's 100% not going to happen. But what could happen is we'll get there and the Board of Governors will officially announce they're going to undergo a formal expansion process, a wide-ranging one, looking at all their options for expansion. And I'm sure as long as Bill Foley wants to meet Gary Bettman's price, which my understanding is $500 million, we'll have a franchise in Vegas. He hasn't announced he hit his goal. My educated speculation is the only reason he doesn't do that is you say you've met your goal, people stop buying, right? So you just sort of keep, we're close, so people keep buying, and then you can announce, hey, we've got 11,000 or 12,000, plus we have all this corporate support. You know, we're going to get a grand announcement from Bill Foley's group about what they've done. The Board of Governors will say, we're going to open the formal expansion process. They'll negotiate an expansion fee, and we'll go from there.
Initiating an expansion process exclusively for Las Vegas, or could there be more on the table?
They're hazy on that. The way it was put to me would be a general expansion process, but I don't know that any other city is in the same position Vegas is right now. I mean, they've got an arena, a lease, an owner, a season ticket drive, and they're in the West. You know, Quebec is unfortunately in the West, which is where the league wants to put a new team or two. So my guess is they'll open a formal expansion process. Here's all of our options. And Vegas will be the one that right now is ready to rock.
Yeah. And then maybe they can just start throwing money around and bribe everybody in Seattle to to get the city council to approve funding for the,
What would be interesting, though, is whether this puts any pressure on Seattle. You know, like, hey, look, this is real. We're doing this. Whether that shakes anything loose up there. I don't have direct knowledge of that, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, indeed. Hey, finally, sir, around the league, I know that you've visited the Montreal series along with the Winnipeg series. What else has caught your eye around the NHL with this whole playoff thing?
Well, I wish like I could see more of the Vancouver-Calgary series. That's been crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I guess Minnesota being up on St. Louis, I think St. Louis is going to be interesting because they've really crumbled the last three playoffs. You know, they lost four in a row, then they were up 2-0, lost four in a row, up 2-0, lost four in a row. Now they're behind. You know, and you hear a lot of things about Hitch having ground down that team. And if they lose this series, I don't think Hitch lasts. So I think there's a lot of pressure there on St. Louis to turn this around, and they'll have to show us something they haven't shown us yet. You know, I can't believe, obviously the big team is goaltending. I can't believe all the goaltending issues around the league. You know, and then some you didn't expect, like I didn't see Corey Crawford getting benched. I didn't see Pekka Rinne looking human. It's just been nuts with the goaltending. I mean, I can't believe it. So that's been the other big team I think I've seen.
That's a huge one, and sort of maybe the overriding theme for the entire season, although early on the narrative said it was going to be mumps and how the mumps affected the NHL and the playoffs. it seems as if, in a lot of ways, Nick, this is the story of the backup netminder. This is the year of the backup netminder is carrying through right into the playoffs.
Well, is it the backup netminder, or is it the fact that starters aren't that great? And that outside of your very, very elite guys, your Carey Price, your Henrik Lundqvist, there really isn't that much to choose between the rest of them.
And you know
when
what?
You're hot,
Yeah, I'm glad you sort of cut you off because I'm glad you got there because in a lot of ways, goaltenders are all just kind of similar right now by all the scales that we grade them. You're right. There's a couple of outliers right on the high end, but generally they all play the same style. Save percentages are, you know, all within the same ballpark right now. Goalies, more so than ever, I think, this year, Nick, that I've seen, are more similar than they are different, both stylistically and in terms of performance.
Yep, and it's all what have you done for me lately. You know, Jimmy 100%. Howard and Brian Elliott yep. were all-stars,
yep.
and now they're backups. And I think coaches also look at other coaches and see that they're not afraid to make a change, and that emboldens them to make a change. You know, they're copycats. You know, like,
yep.
it's not as big of a deal to sit your two-time cup-winning goaltender when your backup's hot. It's just, that's the way it is around the league, so that's what I'm going to do.
Indeed. Well, Nick, you've educated us all about so many things, and thank you so much for your time. Enjoy Game 4. Enjoy the participation ribbon ceremony at the end of Game 4, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks,
well,
Nick.
As I said, to lose, you have to be in the league. Or at least they're in the league.
They are
that's
indeed.
True. That's true. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, boys. See ya. Bye.
It's true. They are in the league. And if they manage to win one, if they manage to win Game 4, they will have a longer and more lasting playoff legacy than the Atlanta Thrashers.
That's true. Because I guess it's 7 in a row now, right?
Yeah. We did the Rangers, right?
Yeah. What do you want to do? What do you want to do now? We got about.
Well, see, I was just wondering. We got about 10 minutes left. We did the Rangers game. We did the
ice cream. Did we do anything score wild? We did ice cream with.
We did the wild. We did the Jetsies.
Parisi, Granlund, and Pominville. Yeah, that seemed to be. Todd.
Because that was all the games last night, right? We didn't miss anybody, did we?
Yesterday, no. Let's see. Got that one. Carry the three. Yeah, we're right. good. We have some games tonight. No, because yesterday was what was yesterday? Yesterday was the extra day off for Montreal Ottawa, wasn't it? Yeah, because they're
right.
carrying over.
Okay, so let's talk about tonight's games. First off, Tampa Bay and Detroit, Mrazek Game 3. I hate yep. when we are so effing right that it's painful how right we are. Brilliant in Game 1, absolute 7 Game 2, back for Game 3. Which Peter Mrazek will we see?
Up and down like a toilet seat at a stag and doe. There you go. There's your old-timey reference for the show.
I still think this is Tampa Bay series to lose. I think the return of Advocator is going to help them a little bit in the sense that they're going to be able to at least put up a fight against the two lines, maybe yeah. split up Datsyuk and Zetterberg. But ultimately, this is Tampa Bay series, I think.
Washington and the Islanders, the John Tavares-led Islanders. Come on, boys, get on my back. John Tavares and the Islanders.
New York Islanders. Two things about this. First of all, the game is on the USA Network tonight. Characters welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Preempt that Law & Order marathon. Turn down the suits. Put on some hockey on USA Network. Very exciting. Also, if you're an Islanders fan, mayhaps not be a racist keying of cars
yeah.
to the license plates
how
asshole.
How about that? Don't be an asshole.
But here's the reason I bring this up is not to malign Islanders fans, because Devils fans are just as bad when it comes to visiting fans. I'm not trying to malign the whole fan base. But I am going to malign the team. Because when the girl got harassed at Bell Center, and Eugene Melnyk invited her and her cousin or whomever to go sit in the owner's box for Game 3, the Canadiens said, wow, that sucks. We apologize. We're going to look into it. We're going to see if there was a failure on our end to protect you. The Islanders put out a statement yesterday. They basically said, wow, that sucks. # not all Islanders fans. Hope maybe not happening again, but I don't know. But no apology. We won't really look into it.
Yeah, like let's not.
It was the most half-hearted bullshit statement I've ever read about this situation. Almost a quasi-endorsement of what their fans did, to be honest with you.
I wouldn't say endorsement. I think they're much like in Vancouver when Vancouver Canucks hockey fans rioted, and the message quickly was, those aren't Vancouver Canucks hockey fans.
No.
Hockey fans
not
don't
all,
behave
no.
that way.
Hashtag not all Trevor Linden jersey owners. Which
yeah,
are the
exactly.
guys that were breaking windows and stealing televisions.
I always say the same thing. It's only in Vancouver where the anarchists wear Christian Ehrhoff jerseys in 2011. Must just be me. Must just be me. But yeah, it seemed as if they were more concerned with not brushing the fan base or the organization in a certain way than looking after the people that were wronged. Unfortunate.
Here's what I'm looking for out of the Capitals tonight, and to see if things are really different. Braden Holtby steals a game. That's what I'm looking for tonight. Braden Holtby steals a game tonight. Evens this thing 2-2, makes the best of three. Nashville and Chicago, the Scott Darling show continues for the Blackhawks. Nashville sans Shea Weber again. Chicago leads 2-1. Miracle of miracles if the Nashville Predators win this game. Mayhaps they go back home and get Weber back, and all of a sudden the series turn on its ear. More likely, Chicago goes up 3-1, I think.
I know I'm singing from the same hymn book that you have open right now, too, and many people listening to this podcast right now, but there are few things better than watching Marian Hossa play in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Not saying that he coasts through the regular season, because he doesn't, but even at the age of 36, Marian Hossa, this machine, finds another level to play at.
You know what's
and
amazing?
It's one of the most glorious things to watch Hossa play in the playoffs.
Think about the fact that Hossa, at one point in recent history, was the poster boy for lack of postseason success. Like, he was it, man. Like he was a mercenary bouncing from team to team. And and you ask people, like, who's the best player to never win a cup? Marian Hossa was the go-to answer. And now
you're right.
You haven't thought about that in years with this guy.
Chase it in Pittsburgh, chase it in Detroit, find it in Chicago. You're
crazy.
Right. I forgot about that.
Finally, also on USA Network, characters welcome, preempting what I'm sure would have been a number of different episodes of Hawaii 5-0, perhaps Royal Pains, whatever the show is on USA Network at 10 o'clock at night. Vancouver and Calgary, our favorite series, the series that's given us the most biggest heap and spoonfuls of all-time hockey, including what passes for a line brawl these days.
Will
Sven Berchi play in this game?
Sai got the call-up. Oh, the controversy. Treated like unleavened bread, passed over by Bob Hartley in Calgary, only to return to the Vancouver Canucks. He was not wanted on the voyage in Calgary. Can he come back to haunt his old team? The narrative writes itself. That was really weird what happened to Sven Berchi with Calgary, wasn't it? Like, everyone that played with him said, man, this guy's real good. Everybody except the coach. And then the organization finally just said, okay, look, the coach isn't going to play him. He's going nowhere in this organization. Let's try to get something for him, because he's going nowhere right now.
Interesting. And finally, we should mention that on redbubble.com, according to Patrick M., there should be new T-shirt designs, but I don't quite see them yet.
Did they go up today?
He's saying they should be up, but I don't see them quite yet. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Does this hang on? Does the stretcher be?
Ed Willis was reporting that Alex Burrows, outside medical people are now attending Alex Burrows, who left the ice before, and he's carried out on a stretcher.
Irfan Gafar just said Alex Burrows just left the rink on a stretcher. Ooh.
Yeah, hopefully Burrows is okay. Jeez, that's kind of scary.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Time to make some...
Well, we leave you on an ambiguous note. Hopefully Alex Burrows is okay. That's kind of scary. EMTs.
Yeah, hope he's all right. Jeez.
Yeesh.
Okay, our friend Lexi, to even bring it down even further, Lexi says, had a similar experience at Nassau 2 years ago, so we're talking about the Islanders fans. With Islanders fans, some fans is enough to address bad behavior. Here's the thing. Vincent, if you're a hockey fan, just don't be an ass.
Vincent read up on who this car keying victim is and his conduct at the game on Sunday. Good on the team for not bending over. There's been a lot of sort of messenger shooting on this one, because evidently this guy has been the guy who wrote the big long blog piece about the incidents also said some nasty things on Twitter and things like that. Of course, he was with a group, and anybody from the group could have easily stepped up and said the guy was lying. I don't know. You know how I feel about shooting the messenger. But it happens, and it's an easy way to just dispel the things that we don't like in life. Who's saying the thing I don't like? Oh, him? Well, then it loses all of its validity. Lord knows that's never happened to me. What? A blogger is saying this? How? Why would I pay attention to a blogger? He probably lives in his mother's basement.
Hey, Melissa Bergeson says she can see the t-shirts. They're up there.
Why can't I see them?
I don't know. Hey, are we doing the Wounded Warriors charity this time around?
I don't know if it's Wounded Warriors or Heart Association or something. Yeah, I can't see him for some reason.
What happened to the Jeff Merrick Benevolent Fund that we talked about?
Don't even start. Don't even friggin' start with John, with that thing where you're like, oh, yeah, where's the money for me? Oh, man, you just pissed me right off. All right, listen. We'll stay on the Burroughs thing. Hopefully he's all right. Sorry to end on an ambiguous, sad note. There you go. Here, we'll bring up your spirits. Imagine Mike Milbury as the Boston Bruins' new head coach.
Our general manager.
You have to be kidding me. Could you imagine?
Yeah, I can. It's close to that organization.
Hold on one second here. What the fuck is going on with Burroughs?
I don't know. This looks weird. Like everybody else, I'm scrolling through Twitter.
Blake Price. Who's Blake Price?
He's a radio host in Vancouver. He used to work on TSN television.
Okay. Blake Price reported... Sounds like Burroughs may have been being Burroughs with the quote-unquote help leaving the ice earlier. Lyndon says he's in tonight. Getting the feeling Lyndon was given bad info on Burroughs, sounding less like a joke now. Very strange, conflicting info. What? Oh my god, Vancouver. Vancouver v. Vancouver right now.
All right.
Patrick M. writes in, yes, Wounded Warriors, U.S. and Canada. So Wounded Warriors is the... Listen, Sunshine, I refreshed the page many... Oh, it's up now. Yeah. There's It's Hilarious 69 jerseys, a killer awesome Merrick Brzezinski shower beer label.
Yeah.
A very, very funny Shampoo a Baby Bear t-shirt.
My personal favorite.
And then also a great one that says, buy the t-shirts, dummies, that has...
I think that was your quote.
That is my quote. The It's Hilarious 69 shirts, by the way. There is one that is... I don't know what font that is, but there's definitely one that is a Columbus Blue Jackets font. But the shower beer one is the one that you should buy. It's got a nice caricature of me and you. You look like you're about 20. I have R2-D2 on my t-shirt.
Yeah, I think look great. I look like all you young and fresh. Like, holy smokes.
You look incredible. You look like a young Republican, I look like a slacker with beautiful parted hair.
It's like right before someone said to me the first time in my life, hey, you want to try this?
That great scene in The Simpsons where the first time Barney gets a drink,
yes,
and his face transforms.
That's me right before that happened in my life. Hey, you want to try this, Merrick?
Oh, you mean have a beer?
All right.
Yeah, I got to go. That's hilarious. All good right. Job. Hey, Patrick, great job, bud. Super
great work. Job, man. Thank you so much for doing that. Everybody buy new t-shirts, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Thank you.